Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 17th on the West Coast, now February the 18th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd like to say hello to all those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com. And a special shout out to all of our friends in the intelligence community. I'm going to cut straight to the chase. We've got a special guest on with us tonight, and rather than read the news secondhand, let's go straight to the news. The publisher, editor of the Idaho Observer, and the widow of my good friend, the late Don Harkins, co-editor and publisher of the paper, Ingrid Castle. Ingrid, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. That was a very sweet introduction. Really, I inherited the Idaho Observer, I have to admit. It was definitely Don's paper, but I'm doing my best to maintain, you know, the level of integrity that, you know, Don put into the paper. In fact, I even revisited today, Don, some of the reasons he was taken out, and revisited that the Scherf articles were actually very, very important. The work that you did with him, the very first articles we published, we did the
Wanta piece.
The Wanta piece. Yeah. I was just thinking, because that's come up recently, too, you know, the whole Wanta gate stuff, but... Yeah, that was the first, the Scherf material, you know, about Senior Bush and his involvement with Tesla and how, you know, they came over from Germany and was inserted into this family and, you know, the whole thing. And, that's still on our website and on your website, and there's still a great demand for those articles. I get requests for them all the time.
Yes, you know, I hate to think that something that I contributed to the paper or humanity would have resulted in Don's demise, and yet we know that that's a risk we take, especially when you're dealing with the kind of evil, and by no means am I trying to minimize his passing. It may interest you. I don't know if I've shared this with you, but going through some of the facts that put that whole story together, I came across an Ellis Island document where George H. Scherf admits he's from Dulwich, Germany. It's recorded at Ellis Island. That did not go into the article, but it could posthumously, we'll say. I thought that you'd find that very interesting.
Yes.
That it is documented right there at the Port of New York.
Wow.
You
do some amazing research, Don. You know, that nobody else would find.
Yeah, I've got a humdinger on the way. You know, the follow-up to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Eisenhowers.
Right.
And it's every bit is mind-blowing. There's plenty of documentation to support everything that I've written in the prior articles. In fact, it's a godsend. It's divine providence that some letters appeared, and so you're going to see how they infiltrate our government, how it's done officially, and you're going to find some interesting players played a role in that. Some very knowingly, and others I think innocently.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be fascinating, I assure you, and our readers. So, what is news these days, Ingrid? It's been a while since we've actually had a chance to talk.
you realize that my passion has been the vaccine issue, and we have two pages on that that I compiled early on, because as soon as the January paper came out, they started these hearings with Dr. Andrew Wakefield in England. He was brought to trial, and they keep, you know, it's, they consider he's broached medical ethics, and they wanted to retract the Lancet Journal article that he published back in 1998, and it's been there for 12 years. Why all of a sudden? Well, it wasn't quite all of a sudden. There was a buildup. We have Brian Deer, the journalist that actually filed the initial complaint, totally works for Reuters, and who is a, you know, a whole Reuters news service is very involved with GlaxoSmithKline, and anyway, there's a lot of expose stuff in the UK regarding the persecution of Andrew Wakefield and blaming Andrew Wakefield for the poor uptake in that country of the triple antigen measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, and then parents demanding single antigen vaccines. Mm-hmm. But the people there are quite aware. They have a website, Child Safety, Child Health Safety, that has been documenting everything really, really well. And we've spread, put that in our paper a couple times, you know, over the years. But this latest in how the mainstream media has handled it, it's nothing more than a huge witch hunt. And to me, the timing is really telling, because he had just completed a study with 13 monkeys where these monkeys, it was, I mean, a very scientifically controlled study, you know, where some of the monkeys were given, in fact, did I write all that down in detail? I have the study. But they were broken down into groups of ones that were given a placebo, ones that were given the full childhood immunization schedule, and the other ones were given nothing at all. So, the placebo injections, the full childhood immunization schedule, and then, you know, the control. And anyway, very interesting, of course, every single monkey came down with neurological defects and what's akin to autism spectrum disorder, and all the ones that were injected with the same schedule that our children receive. And it's an explosive study, eight authors from universities across the country, and it was all slated to be published, and we just got news that they're not publishing either. And so now Sherry Tenpenny and everyone on our Vax Activist list is like, start grabbing all of his articles and everything he's ever done and all of his research and archive it and store it before it gets, you know, disappeared. So, you know, it's kind of like what we did with history books. I mean, there's all kinds of fantastic books written opposing vaccinations right at its inception in the 1800s, and these books have just, you know, disappeared. And so we were on a huge search with the founding of Vaccination Liberation to find those books, any of them, all of them, and scan them in and put them into the computer so other people could access it, that information. Mm-hmm. And we have that freely available at VacLib.org. That's short for Vaccination Liberation. VacLib.org, and you can also get there by going to vaccinetruth.com. But and there's other Soil and Health website, I think, has several historical books that are scanned in too for free.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just wanting to make this information available that vaccines were born in fraud, they never eradicated smallpox or polio, and that it's a huge Illuminati agenda. You know, what people don't realize, Don, is that it's one of the first assaults that cuts off your spiritual connection to your Creator. So you find that people that are naturally gifted with a strong sixth sense or intuition and stuff, when they start, the more toxins they put in their system, the more that connection is cut off. And I even have a friend who was, you know, quite psychic, and then he had heavy metal poisoning in a job, and it totally lost his psychic connection, and he didn't do the detoxing necessary to bring it back.
Hmm. Now, I don't know if you've been how much you've been paying attention to the work that Dr. H. Huat has been doing in regard to the vaccine, but he and I sort of went on about a 3-month rampage at the end of last year and up until the New Year's, and basically exposing all the players behind the scenes, what pharmaceutical companies were in bed with what researchers, and Dr. Henry Nyman's company came up quite a bit. In fact, I saw the association between his promotion of the vaccine and his Ligand Pharmaceuticals and a couple of other companies that he founded. Of course, he stood to make hundreds of millions of dollars by promoting the vaccine, so obviously he would do that. And we exposed these relationships, and all the furor died down. It actually slowed down quite a bit. Now they've been trying to ramp it up again a second time. Already they're out of sync with the schedule that I published in this IBM article that I wrote last year, where I exposed the 2006 document that IBM put out describing a pandemic that would occur.
I remember that, yeah.
You know, so we've been ahead of them, or at least keeping pace with them, with their draconian laws to protect the pharmaceutical companies, the way they try and intimidate the parents whose kids are attending school. You know, it's probably, they're doing us a favor by saying that kids can't go to the schools, because then they can't be brainwashed. there's an advantage to that. You know, if you don't want to have your kids vaccinated or vaccinated by them,
right,
then, you know, that's a right you should keep.
I totally agree, Don, but, you know, at the same time, we have parents that are feeling like they need to use a school as a babysitter, and it's horrible. I would never send my child to school either, but I know several parents that are rocking a hard place, and I did just respond to this woman just a few minutes before the show, a woman in Oregon, you know, feedback off our website, and she's, you know, says they won't let her granddaughter into school unless she has a DPT shot. And what does she do? And I just said, if she doesn't have a religious exemption already filed with the school, it is still not too late to object on religious grounds. However, the most expeditious way to deal with the issue is to force the bureaucrat, school nurse, superintendent, or anyone requiring one of these shots, a DTAP shot in this instance, for registration with the school to accept medical liability. And this is the trick that we have, like, an excellent form that was developed by a paralegal for his wife, who's a nurse that was told that, you know, no H1N1 and no job. It's like, well, oh, that's interesting. So he developed a really legal proof one that can be used by anyone on our website. And you just go to avoid vaccinations at the top of the page and get to refusal forms and click on that. And we have a slew of different creative forms, but the very first one at the top is the one that's, you know, a really strong legal case. And it's fairly long, but, you know, you can just cut and paste it into a Word document and make it your own. So I encourage people to do that. But I said, you know, if no one is willing to sign it, guaranteeing the safety and effectiveness of the required medical procedure, you know, this is a medical procedure. That's what people, and, you know, really, it's breaking the skin. It's akin to surgery. Surgery requires informed consent. And a lot, they've really obfuscated the fact that it is a form of surgery. Anything, any type of medical procedure that breaks the skin is a form of surgery. And that's, Wendy didn't want him to leave me, my co-director, and then she was at some yard sale and picked up an old set of World Book encyclopedias, and it was right in there. She couldn't believe it.
I recall as far back as I think I was in second grade or third grade, and one of the students in the class had a really bad toothache. You know, kids teeth at different times of their life, and they're not all teething at the same time, thank God. Or you'd have a classroom full of screaming kids. But the school nurse gave the student an aspirin, and eventually that the word got out, and the nurse got in all kinds of trouble. I mean, this was a major issue at that school for years after that happened. And now look where we've come from being in trouble for giving an aspirin to a child that was obviously having, you know, some distress, to vaccinate, forced vaccinations. What is this world coming to? You know, when you think about that, and I know I'm not asking you for a literal response, but certainly you see the degradation of society, do you not?
Well, yeah. I mean, we see these kinds of things on these lists where they're making it like people that don't vaccinate should have their children taken from them, and it's criminal, and they're the source of all this disease. I mean, it's a huge witch hunt and a lot of erroneous foundational beliefs in people's heads that is promoted, you know, by the pharmaceutical industry, through schools and the mainstream media. And it's really frightening when people would have that kind of an attitude that an unvaccinated person is a disease carrier and the source of disease, when the opposite is true. Mm-hmm. And that it's that kind of militant, you know, mindset that really...
Well, and
that
they're not really being truthful about the source of the disease itself either. You know, you're talking about laboratory-created diseases created in military laboratories, and modified, and the true nature of the vaccinations themselves is not being fully disclosed. You hear, you know, live virus, attenuated virus, certain adjuvants in there, certain adjuvants not in there, and all they do is lie, so you can't really trust anything. You know, how do you go about getting a definitive appraisal or appraisal of what they're trying to do to the people?
Right. Well, when you look at the full picture with what they're doing, the food supply, you know, the poisoning of our air, food, and water, I have this CD I'm listening to in the car from Jeffrey Smith, who is quite the expert on genetically modified organisms and, you know, the proliferation of GMOs just in the food supply. And all the animal studies, you know, they became sterile, they died, I mean, you know, lesions in their stomach. And a lot of what was happening to animals in the experiments with GMO foods that were suppressed is what's endemic now in the population, the kind of same kind of illnesses. And, you know, you can't go anywhere you know, out to eat or, you know, without being exposed to genetically modified organisms or, I mean, that kind of food, you know, GMO food. And corn, canola, soy, and what's the other big four? Soy, canola, corn, and...
Federal Reserve notes.
No, there's the four big ones that it's all genetically modified. I can't believe it. I just reiterated it earlier today. Well, I don't know how you do it, Don. I mean, it's got to be 2 a.m. for you, or close to it. But, you know, it's like, but anyway, there's the big four, and it's like in, you know, it's just throughout, it's all the vegetable, you know, when you have stuff cooked in vegetable oil, that's what it is. It's genetically modified. You know, all of McDonald's, you know, Burger King. I mean, you know, it's, and you know, you find so many people that as they, especially young people, they don't know even how to cook from scratch. And even if they did, they feel stretched financially, especially if they have children and they're, you know, not making a good wage. You know, they will eat the cheaper food that is genetically modified. And not even know it. They won't know the difference because all the, you know, processed foods. And we have aspartame and MSG and now Cinemix. You know, Cinemix, that is a flavor enhancer that fakes out your taste buds to think you're eating something salty and sugary, and it doesn't even have it in it.
Mm-hmm.
We're really entering the matrix now. Yeah. Because, yeah, they even approved it for use, the Cinemix thing, to cut the use of Splenda, you know, the sucralose, the chlorinated sugar that they're putting in products. They They can cut it by 75% by adding this chemical taste bud tricker.
Well, yeah, and you know, there are still people using products that are made up of aspartame, regardless of the name they put on them. You know, you have the pink and the blue and the yellow little paper pouches that sit on top of a restaurant table as sugar substitutes, and mm-hmm. and it's been determined that it causes major nerve damage. My God, it's rat poison. Literally, it was created to be rat poison. So you still have that basic ignorance there with the general populace. And you know, I've asked people in restaurants. I don't go to restaurants that often, but when I do, and I see Sweet and Low or NutraSweet or whatever they call all these different artificial sweeteners, I ask them if they would please remove the rat poison from the table before they bring the food. And they look at you like you're crazy. What are you talking about? And I said, well, you have aspartame over there on the side of the table. I'd like it removed. And you challenge them to look up the word, and then they come back and they apologize and they say, I didn't realize that's what that is, you know. We may lose a lot of our customers, but I certainly don't want to get sued for contributing to the death or the illness of customers. And I know what's in that stuff now, and I can't I couldn't live with myself knowing that I'm contributing to that.
Right.
That's what it takes really to get the word out, you know. But there are so many people who are brain dead when it comes to those issues.
Well, you want to really stick it to the restaurant owner's conscience, and I cease going to restaurants when they know the information. I've given them the artificially sweetened times that we publish, and I've, you know, told them, you know, about GMOs and, you know, the different kinds of oils and different things, and they insist on, you know, making all that stuff available. Yeah, that's enough for me to leave. I mean, you know, not return back. But, yeah, I love what I titled the article that that we put in our paper. I just have to tell you this. We were dinking with the titles, you know, trying to make them fun. And so when the Cinemix was approved, a specific, you know, they basically, the company is called Cinemix, that produces these flavor enhancers. And their main companies that they have contracts with are like Campbell's Soup, Coca-Cola, Nestle, Soleil, you know, these are Cadbury. These are, you know, main processed food companies. Mm-hmm. They're subsidiaries. So, you know, even though you think that, well, that's not a Campbell's Soup product, there are, you know, they have other companies, sub-companies that do all kinds of processed foods out there. You know, these are just like the umbrella. But like Splenda is actually produced by Johnson & Johnson, but it's marketed by McNeil Nutritional. A lot of people don't know that. So anyhow, they tailor-made one of their flavor enhancers just for Splenda to be able to reduce it in different, you know, processed food products that they were using it in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they don't have to label. That's the whole thing. They don't have to put any of it on the label because it's such a small amount. The FDA has ruled if it's less than, you know, 0.1% of a product, it doesn't have to be put on the label, or, you know, some small amount. I don't have it exact in front of me. But, you know, that's how they were able to put aspartame in a lot of products without labeling it, because they have Neotame, which I call aspartame on steroids. You know, it's just a very small amount. But it's definitely just as deadly as if you put the equivalent of aspartame by weight. So anyway, I titled it, Beware All Processed Food. Now even Soylent Green can taste good.
By the way, not to change the subject, one of our listeners...
I just thought that was cute, you know? I mean, you know, I mean, you could be eating dead people and it'll all taste good. You won't even know it.
I just watched that movie a couple of days ago, too. Soylent Green, I'm saying. One of our listeners sent me a chat message that quite possibly you were trying to think of tomatoes. Now, I know that I've heard a couple of reports where they're trying to crossbreed tomatoes and meat. I guess that's so you can just grow a sandwich, huh?
Well, actually, Jeffrey Smith, he's really done fabulous research on this, but nearly all of our vegetables and fruits now, they're figuring out how to genetically modify it to have different properties, to resist spoilage, to be able to ripe, you know, just everything, you know. But they are using, you know, animal RNA and DNA in with the vegetables. So being a vegetarian has a whole different meaning these days.
Oh, my goodness.
But, yeah, they spliced it, and they literally have these gene guns. That's what they call them, gene guns, and they force, you know, the specific property they want, this specific DNA, into the genes of another species or plant. And it's a total, she calls it like gene roulette, because you could get all kinds of side variations. They don't know what the heck they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a huge experiment tampering with the genetic code of all life on the planet.
And using us as guinea pigs, of course.
Well, the whole planet is a testing ground for Lucifer, it appears to be. You know, this is at war against creation. And this is, you know, when we started finding out that they're genetically modifying trees and whole forests, you know, for harvesting the wood, when we have hemp that is, you know, hemp is a renewable resource. It's good for the soil. I mean, trees should never be harvested, frankly, for anything. They are, what do you call it? I mean, they're essential for...
They're natural filters is what they
are.
Well,
they're filters, but they also are... I mean, if you get rid of the trees, you create deserts. That's the Sahara Desert used to be a huge forested region. It's not a natural desert. But trees are self-condensation units. They actually draw clouds to themselves. It's not the other way around. We always used to think, you know, that the rain comes and creates the forest. But no, the forest itself draws the water off the ocean in their what we call self-condensation units. And when they're trying to reforest desert land or desert area, like they have tried to reforest parts of the Sahara Desert, they build these concrete columns, and they'll plant a seedling next to it. So the concrete column that's real is like a fake tree to create it as a condensation unit, and then the seedling is planted right next to it.
Hmm.
It's very interesting, yeah. You know, what they've done to try to figure this out. But that's, but anyhow, once you get rid of the trees, you know, the whole planet is, you know, that's it. I mean, it's way bad. So I've just, you know, the title of that article is, I mean, we're literally at war against creation with this. We looked at the DU, that was horrifying, the radiation of the planet, that's horrifying. But, you know, when they do this extensive amount of tampering to the genetic code of every living thing on the planet, that's you know, beyond the pale to me. Because
mm-hmm.
It's not something you can't reverse, you know, and it travels. Like, you know, the pollen from these trees, there was an organic papaya grower in Hawaii, and he was unable to keep the GMO trees from another island from infecting his papaya trees. And when his papaya trees were tested, they were all infected from the GMO trees.
And then Monsanto wants to come in there and accuse you of stealing their patented seeds.
Right, we understand. But these are trees. Yeah. You know, the trees were you know, the GMO stuff. But he, for ethical reasons, he felt it was best that he destroyed his whole plantation of papaya trees because they were all contaminated. And he, you know, and a lot of people are doing that, you know, just to try to save. That's just why all over the world, you know, they're using the universities to do all the test GMO tree plots. And mm-hmm. there's in Europe and in universities all over our country, the students are doing, you know, what they would consider a crime of arson. And they, you know, they should be really lauded as heroes.
Mm-hmm.
But they're burning down these GMO seedling trees and, you know, the test plots. And it's a huge movement to just stop it. Because once it takes off, it is, you know, it's that you can't stop it. And it infects all the healthy trees.
Now, have you heard of Feasteria, which is a what's considered to be a genetically engineered phytoplankton? Have you heard anything about that?
I actually have. I don't know that much about it.
Well,
I really don't, but I've heard of this thing.
Basically, what it is, it's a shape-shifting one-celled creature that lives in aquatic mediums, in rivers and streams and lakes, and it has the ability to basically, use a stealth method of travel, and then when it comes into proximity of a fish, it will grow its own flagella, which now enable it to infect the fish, and the fish develops an Ebola-like disease. And it doesn't matter what the size of the fish is, if this tiny little critter, which is a shapeshifter, makes contact with it, and it's able to transmit the disease to the fish will die. And Brian Desborough discussed that in his book, They Cast No Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
And I have someone that actually reminded me of a portion of that book. It's really an interesting book. It mm-hmm. discusses the phenomenon of shape-shifting, and that's what we're dealing with here.
Right.
We have shape-shifting that occurs in nature, through the various species, but it appears, again, to be the type of creature that was genetically modified in a laboratory and then reintroduced into the ecosystems of the world with devastating consequences. Of course, you know, what do you accomplish with such a creature? You minimize the food supply for human beings and other animals in nature. Basically, you just turn everything on its ear, even
right.
those animals that don't have ears.
Well, that's the thing that's so horrifying about the trees, because, you know, forests are, you know, harbor all this wildlife. Well, and they're dependent on the trees, you know, for nuts and foraging and, you know, on and on and on. Well, all these trees, the GMO trees, are sterile. I mean, they don't produce nuts. And they're strictly for harvesting wood, and they don't have tensile strength, so they can't resist wind. You know, it's all, you know, they actually develop these trees so that they don't have the fibrous stuff that gums up the machines when they're at the pulp mill, when they're making paper and stuff. When, of course, you know, why aren't they using hemp? You know, we can't figure it out. But of course, we can figure it out because we know that technologies that are beneficial for life on the planet are the ones that are quashed most regularly. So,
no, why?
Did you hear that the Tesla Motors CEOs, they just
they were killed in a plane crash? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That isn't that kind of interesting how this is
wow.
occurring. Of course. You want to keep tabs on what happens with their company now too,
right?
You know, all of their lead people, their key people, or just a few of them?
Three. Well, there are three, and I mean, you know, how many people do they have in a small company like that? The news I got was like it was the three main people.
Mm-hmm. And what people should be tracking too are the backdoor insurance policies that David Hawkins and Field McConnell so studiously bring to our attention on a regular basis. Every time there's a plane crash, they go and look at the activity that's going on, and they've pinned a lot of this activity on Siddeley Austin in Chicago, the law firm that the Obamas worked for. And that is just another example of you know, the secrets that those that pull the strings have behind you know, the veil. Mm-hmm. And it comes out when there's a plane crash or when there's a large number of soldiers that are killed somewhere around the world. All these secret insurance policies out there. Certainly somebody knows those men's value.
Right.
So,
In fact, that's something I'm, I just got a document. It's not that well put together, and I need someone to, you know, look into it more. But we've known about the whole prisoner scam. You know, that's just why we have 25% of the world's prisoners in our jails and prisons in this country. I mean, that's pretty shocking. We have a fraction of the world's population, yet we have 25% of all the prisoners. But there's a whole bonding mechanism that makes them very valuable. You know, it keeps this whole money system afloat. We have the highest debt of any nation, but to keep everything afloat, the whole bonding of prisoners is an aspect. It's wild.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, the same people that make money off of the concessions in professional sports have the food contracts in the schools and in the prisons and in the hospitals. Same companies. And it's not because the food is good. It's because they've created this private market where they control everything. You know, they have 30-year contracts in professional sports. What are their contracts with the federal government and the Bureau of Prisons? What do you think that is? And it's the Bush family. Bush families in there all the time. Doesn't matter if it's sports or prisons. Look up Keefe and Company. You'll see Barbara Bush and Bob Barker from The Price is Right. Are two owners of that company that supplies food to the prisons.
Wow.
And Bush has been involved with Emprise and Sports Services. Now they call it Delaware North. The Jacobs crime family out of Buffalo, New York, runs that.
Well, I know that the food is literally poison that they feed to the prisoners. They have very little access to fresh fruits and vegetables unless they can pay it out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them are, you know, really desperate just for stuff to get their, you know, their colon's functioning. I mean, I hear so many stories from these different prisoners that they're saving their money just to get some prunes at the commissary because they really do not get any fresh fruits and vegetables. It's all this processed GMO, you know, MSG. So, you know, not only are they sentenced to do time, whether they're innocent or not, it doesn't matter because there's not a court system that's functional. They, you know, we have courts that evidence is not allowed to be presented unless, you know, the law is dictated by the judge's lips. I mean, I've seen so many of these unbelievable cases. It just is jaw-dropping. So, but anyway, so they're really desperate, but we're having all kinds of success with people dropping, you know, the pharmaceutical drugs they're trying to force on these prisoners for their health problems and just doing urine therapy. And the testimonies I am getting from these prisoners, reversing cancer, all kinds of ailments that they have. This one guy, his glasses broke. And, you know, if your glasses break, and he said it was broken a place where you can't tape it, you know. And he was like, oh, my gosh, you know, what am I going to do? And he started doing urine therapy, applying it to his eyes and just anyway and doing eye exercises. And he has perfect vision now.
Don was talking about that, I think, on either the last or the second of the last show he did with us. And he was describing all these different processes that they're using, you know, for situations where they were not getting proper medical attention within the prison. You know, so it's...
I wish Sherry Peel Jackson, I mean, I wish I... You know, she was aware of that, and I probably should have tried to get a letter to her. I mean, no one's heard from her. She's been, you know, a lot of people think she's disappeared. I mean, that was a story even in the American Free Press that he hadn't heard from her since, you know, before Christmas and doesn't know where she is. I mean, that's pretty horrifying. Her own husband.
Yeah. Her husband doesn't know either, right?
Yeah. You're saying. It's just a lot of people suspect that she's been murdered and it's been suppressed. It's just wild.
Yeah, of course.
But, yeah, she made us think about her lack of medical care. I mean, she was having really serious medical problems. She was worried about dying in prison. She was appealing to her, you know, state representatives and appealing to all of us, like, please help me. And they punished her for it. And, you know, it seems, I mean, if she would have known, she would have just started drinking her urine and forget whatever drugs they give her. I mean, I'm telling you, I have story after story after story. It is so, prisoners so thankful that they found out about it. And that I basically put that in my column in January 2009. Anyway, it's on our website, idaho-observer.com. And I still get letters to the editor that are behind the razor wire from prisoners that are very, very thankful. In the November edition of this year, we had a letter from a guy in Colorado, and he has shared it with many people in the prison there, and the doctors are just baffled that they're recovering without the use of any of their nostrums, no drugs, and they're still being given the same crap food.
Now, I got a letter, in fact, it was forwarded to me by the paper from one of the prisoners that said he was in touch with Michelle Robinson's mother, who was being held captive at the White House. Did you have a chance to read that by any chance?
I didn't. I believe I just forwarded it to you, and I think there's a couple prisoners that seem to have some kind of inside psychic track or whatever, and I'm pretty sure that particular one, he sent us some very, very interesting things that are quite the interesting connect the dots. And he was the same man that 6 months after you were sharing with us your research into who Obama's father really likely was, is, he sent us a letter. We hadn't done anything in the paper on that aspect at all, and he sent us a letter, and it was the exact same thing that your research had shown, you know, that it was Michael Rockefeller.
Yeah, and it was before the article came out.
Before, and he had put that all together, and he says, yeah, you know, these Illuminati guys, they love to do little play on opposites, and of course it's not a black father and a white woman, and that's a military family. It was planted into this family, but yeah, the real thing is a dark or blacker mother and the Rockefeller father.
Mm-hmm.
But he nailed it as Michael Rockefeller right away. And you know, the whole history of Michael Rockefeller, he's like, yeah, that was definitely the sperm donor.
Yeah, and
they love their bloodline.
A lot of people are convinced of that now, and will be more so as time goes on. And let's hope it's not too late for that to occur.
Yeah, it's definitely the struggle between good and evil is in full swing right now, and it, you know, you don't think it could be much darker than it is right now, but you know. At the same time, Don, there's a mass awakening of people, you know, turning to their creator, seeking guidance, you know, praying on a regular basis, turning their personal lives around. But, you know, at the same time, I mean, I'm seeing whole families breaking up, you know, with weird possessions. You know, I a really close friend of mine, her twin sisters, is just acting like she's totally possessed. She's speaking in tongues and doing this really weird behavior on, you know, the other members of the family. Yeah, I mean, vicious stuff. I mean, turning, you know, family members into authorities for no basis and stuff, and just vengeful, strange stuff. I mean, this is a person that's, you know, a Bible thumper and speaking in tongues, allegedly. I mean, you know, this kind of thing, and doing some really weird stuff that's, you know, vindictive. So you're just like, wow, this is wild. So, I mean, you're going to see that more, I think, you know. I mean, people either, you know, being possessed or you know, turning their lives around another, you know, toward the light. So, I don't know. It's definitely interesting times. That's all I could say.
Yeah, those things don't happen in the natural order. They're influenced from outside, whether, you know, you want to call it demonic possession or, a situation where you have a parasitical kind of relationship with demons,
mm-hmm.
or the demons themselves that you know, run the show and are just trying to make everybody's lives miserable, creating all of this artificial chaos, which eventually will manifest into some semblance of its own identifiable chaos, that you can look at somebody and tell that they're about to lose it. I see that now. You know, like you're saying, I notice that with certain people. And sometimes I look in the mirror and I see that myself.
Right. Well, no, this situation is, I mean, this just happens to be, you know, my really close friend who helped me immensely with Dawn. She's absolutely brilliant. She's a former co-director with FacLib and just, you know, has always stretched her hand out and helped people, you know, overcome mm-hmm. cancer. Very much a student of Hulda Clark. And it's just, you know, really one of the most hardworking, wonderful women I know, and it's happening to her where it's just like, my gosh, she feels like she's literally under attack. And and luckily, you know, for her, she does have a lot of friends that are coming out, and her mother's, you know, come over from a neighboring state to help her and everything. Just like, oh my gosh, this is insane.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's, you know, you know, you have to know that, you know, this is happening. Things like this mm-hmm. are happening to shut us down.
Yeah, people have to realize that it's not themselves that's at the root cause of this, that it's being done to them from outside of themselves.
Right.
And you know, it puts one in a very strange, unusual state of mind where nothing makes any sense, and they feel like they've lost all their friends and the people that care about them, and they start questioning their own motives. And this is happening to a lot of people. They're tired of living, but they're just reacting to all the subliminal stuff that's happening and all of the energy-directed weapons that they're enduring and all the technology and all the, you know, the pollution. There's all sorts of pollution, and the psychic pollution is probably the worst of it,
mm-hmm.
which is intentionally put out there to cause all these unnatural disruptions in people's everyday lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I find, you know, I don't know about you, I find that prayer certainly works, because the demons that do this can't stand to be around somebody praying. And what they do loses its effectiveness in terms of whatever it, you know, it does. It's basically destructive and manipulative. And a good heartfelt prayer really, you know, is like a right cross. No pun intended.
Right. Well, no, I've seen this over and over again, too. People's lives turn around just repeating in their mind. If they can just get focused on God and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, over and over again, to whatever person they feel that is attacking them or causing them problems. We had this gal, one of our subscribers, and I put that in the paper too, her testimony. She said, I just started to repeat that over and over again. I, you know, read about, what's the guy in Japan? I keep forgetting his name. You know that did the water.
Benjamin Fulford.
No, oh, I'll get his name.
You're not talking about a writer.
No, I'm talking about the guy who did the experiments with water, with thinking and thought.
Oh,
yeah, Masaru Emoto.
Emoto, Dr. Emoto, yes.
Right, Emoto, Doctor. Where You know, and how the water crystals changed based on our own thoughts, and our negative thoughts made the water chaotic. And here, our bodies are composed of what? Mostly water. And then our planet, you know, is primarily water. I mean, there's, you know, water is everything, really, to life. And to change the structure of the water just from our thoughts being focused on God and love and light can actually change a lot on the planet. And she suggests, you know, after she was had a coworker that she had a kind of an upsetting experience where there was just a rift between them, just an uncomfortable tension, never anything resolved, and she just kept surrounding her with light and saying, I love you, mentally, and really meaning it. And, you know, she goes into work the other day, and they had to work together, and the woman literally slipped, had to talk to her, and slipped her arm around her shoulders. I mean, bizarre. But, you know, it's not really bizarre because we have the power to change the channel. So she's encouraging all of us to do that. And then, of course, we have, you know, the Hawaiian guy, I love you, please forgive me, I'm sorry, thank you. You know, where you say that over and over again.
Yeah, in regard to getting your hands on the certificate of live birth, you mean.
Yes. we go to Hawaii. Yeah. And we just keep going over there and you say, you know, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. And we just say that over and over to the governor and it'll just magically appear. She'll have the long birth certificate in her hands. Well, I actually mentioned that in the paper too, as the whole Interpol executive order, which was so wild. And everyone's like, oh, trying to figure it out. Well, actually, you know, there's several people that have written about it, and I just did a short little, very, very small synopsis. But, you know, the main thing with that executive order is that here we have an international police force with offices in the Justice Department right in their umbrella in New York. And this woman said that the executive order was only applied to their New York office, Interpol, where they're literally exempt from any oversight. And they, yeah, I mean, it's just they have total immunity. So here we have this, you know, these records that are being held under the thumb of the Department of Justice in a separate building that has, nobody can access these records. You know, you can have Freedom of Information Act request or anything. No one can access these records. And so it's speculated that, you know, Obama could be putting his original long-form birth certificate there. I mean, after all, he spent over $2 million, you know, on attorneys, you know, to defend that whole case. That's taxpayer dollar. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't spend his own money. No, he just gets the attorneys, you know, federal attorneys and stuff out of our own taxpayer to defend him. That's crazy.
Yeah, isn't it interesting that we pay for his own defense as a criminal?
Yeah, that is the whole truth of it. Just like when he flew out to Montana and he had lobsters shipped in and all of this. Oh, man, people were really, really upset. Just north of Bozeman, he had this hangar and, you know, this whole thing bringing in these mucky mucks around the state for this huge taxpayer expense dinner. You know, here we have, you know, an economic downturn. The meat of choice in Montana, you know, with free-ranging cattle would be beef to, you know, to maybe purchase food, like, from the state. What a novel concept. None of that happened, yeah.
Well, he spent, what, $886 getting a St. Louis pizza guy to make pizza? And then Michelle spends $447 on lunch at the Waldorf Astoria.
Yeah.
Drinking champagne and lobster. They have this thing about lobster, don't they?
They do. Lobsters are definitely their favorite thing. Wow.
Well, I guess expect a new restaurant chain to come out sooner or later.
GMO lobster, huh?
Or Jack and the Lobster or something like that. Or...
Oh, well.
Church's Fried Lobster. Or Popeye's what? Lobster.
Yeah, I think you should tell everyone about some of your Eisenhower research that you were telling me the other day.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, we've talked about it a little bit on a couple of the shows in the last couple of days.
Okay.
I'll prepare you for this because you're going to find it fascinating that I was right on the money when I said that Lonnie Roberts wouldn't just be this guy who was being sort of a patriot nobody that really wanted to help Dwight Eisenhower resolve his birth certificate problem and organize, spearhead this campaign to have affidavits filled out, that in actuality, this Lonnie Roberts, surprising the people, is known to Eisenhower, was known to Eisenhower prior to the fact, intimately, and that this Lonnie Roberts was part of a big money laundering ring that associated congressmen and political figures across the country in identity theft and using the Veterans Administration as one means to bilk money, huge amounts of money, creating false identities, all this stuff. It's amazing what I've come up with, and it's certainly going to make a lot of sense. And am I fabricating this? Let me tell you, I've got the letters from these people to one another. And you're going to see people like Lyndon Baines Johnson take the forefront of my investigation.
Wow.
Guy who became president shortly after Eisenhower left office. After a president, it took an assassination of Eisenhower's replacement to bring Lyndon Johnson into play. But it was as though this was his reward for playing ball with the criminals.
Right. Right.
Okay? It's fascinating, Ingrid, I got to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's documented. That's the beautiful thing. It was sent through the post. The post office is actually part of this. The postmaster in Washington, D.C. played a role in this. Veterans Administration played a role. And some governors and big, important political figures of the day. Not as important as they'd like to think they were, but nonetheless,
right.
they had enough clout to be part of this organized ring. And interestingly, I've come to the conclusion, and I will support this in the article, that Eisenhower was not at all of the Republican mindset. He was not part of the Republican Party platform. He was an infiltrator. Not just of our country and our government, but even the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
All the people he associated himself with through this Lonnie Roberts were Democrats.
Really?
Oh, yes. Every single one. Every single one. And this includes James Forrestal, who was the Secretary of the Navy and the first Secretary of Defense. The one that was suicided, by the way. Very, very interesting investigation, how it's panned out. And let me tell you, it's overladen with documents.
Wow.
So you're in for a
surprise.
Yeah,
because I always consider, you know, the Democrat just a cover for the Communist Party.
Well, it is. It is. There's no doubt about that. And let me tell you that there's not much difference between that party and the Republican Party.
Right.
It's actually it's two sides of the same coin. Okay.
Right.
Even it's the same side of the same coin.
Well, we're actually having fun though, doing the attempt takeover of the Republican Party here, and the neocons are really going all out in force to try to get rid of all of our Ron Paul precinct committee people. We've actually been really successful. We have we call him Ron Paul, you know, we all affiliate ourselves with Ron Paul. And now, since Ron Paul somehow is tainted, we're trying to call ourselves Jeffersonians. So we have a Jeffersonian chairman of our central committee in our county, a Jeffersonian sheriff, and mm-hmm. we have a Jeffersonian person in charge of recruiting every, you know, all the new precinct committee people. So we had lots of empty precincts, and we immediately filled them with our people. And so we're totally outnumbering all the neocons. And so and we just discovered there's, before the primaries, there's literally a concerted effort now with flyers and everything to go door-to-door and try to recruit a neocon to replace our Jeffersonian precinct committee people and try to vilify them that we're, you know, we're some crazy. Anyway, they're really rearing their ugly heads. It's pretty interesting. Because they realize they're dying out.
Well, you're going to be on our show. You're going to be on Evident Footprints next week also. So maybe you can give us an update on that. And certainly
we'll
try to answer any questions that come forth.
It's pretty interesting because we had a big meeting last night. Okay.
I'm sorry, your voice kind of dropped off there.
Oh, yeah, we just had a meeting last night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because that, you know, our fearless leader considered it an emergency, and he says, no matter what, he was using Don Harkins as his one of his mottos in one of his emails, no matter what, we're not going to give up. I mean, this is freedom, this is everything, and, you know, we need to, you know, come to the plate here. And he made like 75 phone calls trying to get anyone to come, you know. And it was pretty good. I mean, we actually accomplished a lot. But it's so funny, you know, the Tea Party people, I guess the Sandpoint Tea Party made the New York Times in yesterday's paper.
Hmm.
And that's our county seat in Sandpoint. So there was a meeting last night, a Tea Party meeting, and we had all these people wanting to leave our meeting to go to their meeting. And, you know, it was all our friend could do to hold people from doing that. It's like the hope of the county is here. The Tea Party, they don't have any political clout. They can't do resolution. I mean, you know, the thing is when you're dealing with affecting any kind of change, you've got to be a player on the Democratic team or the Republican team in some way, shape, or form. I mean, we've had people that have been figuring this stuff out for a long time, and they're the ones that are in positions of power right now are ones that's where it starts. It all starts in the Republican or, you know, Democratic. And we live in a red state, and so they played some way dirty politics during the Ron Paul Revolution. And so we have people all over the state that are looking at our county as like the hope for the state. It's pretty funny, you know, because they're being squashed at every turn, you know, by the neocons in control. It's pretty interesting. But they haven't really gotten to our county. I mean, you know, they're trying, but they've failed. And so there's all these strategies. Different, you know, people that are trying to recover, and they're just not making it. We're fairly strong.
Well, hopefully you can give us an update next time you're on the show. I hate to tell you this, but we're out of time. And
out of time?
We have to say goodnight for tonight. We're out of time. We'll have more time tomorrow. It always comes back.
Right. It always comes back. Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks, Don.
And I want to share one note that I got. One of our listeners was listening last night when Canadacci and I talked about the satanic ritual abuse and the reptilian obsession over consuming adrenal chrome through drinking blood of a terrorized victim.
Mm-hmm.
They were wondering if by any chance the long-legged Mac Daddy and his assistant long-legged Mac Daddy by any chance like lobster, because lobster may produce adrenal chrome.
Huh.
That's a good question.
That was, wow, that's interesting, huh?
So I'm going to try to find that answer, maybe from the metaphysical side. And that's David in Washington State asking that question.
Huh.
I want you to give your website out and let people know how they can subscribe to the Idaho Observer, if you would, before we say goodnight.
Okay. Well, thank you, Don. It's idaho-observer.com. It's Idaho, and then you put a hyphen there, observer.com. We have all the articles that are unique to our publication posted there for the last 13 years. And there's a Google search engine, so you can search just about any topic. And everything's archived. And we should have this edition posted by Monday, if not earlier. I have a new web guy that's working better than the guy we had in the fall who would take 3.5 weeks, and I couldn't get him to speed up the process. So anyway, so we have the papers being posted, and you could actually view this current edition that was mailed yesterday, or you can just spring for a subscription for $35 a year. If you want it in an envelope, it's for $40 to have it sealed in an envelope. Otherwise, it just comes plain. So there you go. And
okay.
It's an information-packed paper, and you should get it probably in the mail tomorrow or the next day, Don.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. And I want to encourage people to subscribe. It is one of the few publications in the world that puts the truth out there as best as it can be discovered and communicated. And Don Harkins devoted his life to that and gave his life for that purpose. So if you don't do it for me or Ingrid, at least do it in memory of Don Harkins.
Oh, thank you. And his birthday's tomorrow, just so you know.
Oh,
my
goodness.
His birthday, he would have turned 47.
Well, we dedicate this show to his memory and tomorrow's show, too. Tomorrow I'll have Drew Malone Raines III as my guest,
okay.
Former U.S. Marine, and he always speaks very highly of you and Don and the Observer. So,
thank you.
So tonight's show and tomorrow's show will be a small birthday gift for Don.
Yeah, and anyone can go to donharkins.org. Yep, he has his own website in memory of Don. Okay, well, thank you so much, Don.
The pleasure and honor is all mine, Ingrid, and I look forward to your visit on the 24th. Okay,
you take care
in the meantime.
Yeah, God bless. Thank you so much, Don.
Okay. Thank you. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Ingrid Castle. Be sure to give Ingrid a call during West Coast business hours. That's normally, say, 9 to 5 at area code 208-255-2307 to subscribe directly by voice to the Idaho Observer, or you can subscribe online by visiting just go to idaho-observer.com or idaho-observer.com. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for broadcasting Evident Footprints, along with blogtalkradio.com. And I want to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound tonight. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when our special guest, Drew Malone Raines III, and I will be discussing many of the important news events happening around the world that affect all of us. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.